This is Jim Paskey, and you're listening to the Buckscast.
To begin, we are North Americans, and for those of you who still think we're from England, we're not, no. We put our planes and our trains till we think we might die.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is episode number 8 of the Buckscast, of course. I am your host, as always, Dakota Schmidt, and usually alongside with me, and of course, this week, alongside with me is Nick McKeever. Nick, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic.
And Nick, do you want to tell everybody who the big interview is tonight?
The big interview today is the one and only, the voice of the year, Milwaukee Bucks, Jim Paskey.
Yes, Jim Paskey, long time voice of your Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, he did some years with the Milwaukee Brewers, but we don't care about the Brewers. This is the Bucks cast, not the Brewers cast or something like that. But this is the Bucks cast. We're going to talk to Jim Paskey about Bucks, and you may hear a heated debate about the Miami Heat. Right, Nick?
Yes.
Yes, I think that was the best part of the interview. Of course, you're going to hear that after this little quick music break. And after the interview, we're going to talk about some preseason games. Then we're, of course, going to wrap up the show. There's no Bucks news to really talk about. So we're going to go to the Jim Paskey interview. Then we're going to go to the Bucks preseason games wrap up, then we're going to end the show. So we're going to go to break, guys, and then, of course, the Jim Paskey interview. And I guess we'll see you after the Jim Paskey interview. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Buckscast. And I think we have the biggest guest that we've ever had in Buckscast history on the line. And his name is Jim Paskey. Of course, Jim Paskey is a long-time voice for the Milwaukee Bucks on TV. And he's joining us right now on the Buckscast. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
Great. It's good to be with you guys. My pleasure.
And Jim, it is a pleasure. Both me and Nick, grew up watching you, call some great Bucks teams, some mediocre Bucks teams, and some, really, really disappointing Bucks teams. But the future is looking bright for the Bucks.
Yeah, I think it is too. I'm very excited about the upcoming season. They have a lot of depth. Of course, we've had some injuries to deal with in the preseason, but even through those injuries, they've played pretty well, and they've shown us that the second team and maybe even part of a third team could be tough on opponents this year. So I think that's all good news. The minutes those players are getting in the preseason should help down the stretch and throughout the season.
Hey, Jim, this is Nick. I want to ask, who has impressed you the most in training camp and in the preseason?
Well, I just think the depth is what I've noticed, and the way these new players have picked up the defense that Scott Stiles teaches, it's been pretty good. They've played good defense through the preseason, and I didn't know quite what to expect, but because they're veterans, I think that they have adapted very well to his system. Scott Stiles is a great teacher of the game, and a lot of these players are very happy to be part of something like that, and it's coming together pretty well, I believe.
Bogut did play his first game since his horrible, injury against Phoenix in April. Of course, we didn't get a chance to see it, but he did. How did Andrew Bogut look on court? Did he look a little rusty, or did he just look just like he did, in January or February?
Well, I watched him a month or so ago in 5-on-5 drills, and he looked very good. He was playing normally, and then, of course, his hand got banged around in training camp a little bit. I wouldn't say he was rusty, but I think it's difficult for a player to go from not playing in game conditions to game conditions, and perhaps we saw a little bit of that. But I thought his line was pretty good. I thought he put up pretty good numbers. He did everything, both ends of the court. He's wearing a pad on his right hand, but it didn't seem to hamper him at all, and I was pretty impressed with his first 14 minutes of play.
Okay, which of the new acquisitions, signings, draft picks, whatever, have impressed you? Has CDR impressed you? Has Sanders, Brackman, Boykins, who's impressed you the most out of the new guys?
Well, it's really hard to say. I haven't seen Corey Maggette, and I'm sure that he will do a great job. Drew Gooden has played very well. He's been playing at center, which is not his normal position. He's a power forward, and he has performed extremely well as the center in Bogut's absence. So I think he's probably been one of the players that I've noticed the most. But Chris Douglas Roberts is doing a good job. He can get to the basket and score. He's picking up the defense. He's adapting his habits to what Scott Stiles wants. There have been a lot of guys. Brandon Jennings has been steady during the preseason. So just overall, I think I like what I've seen so far.
You talked about Maggette not being able to play. And I guess Salmons also has not been able to play. Of course, year-round, in the shoot-arounds, practices. What are, Maggette and Salmons doing in those practices?
Well, I don't worry about John Salmons. He showed us what he can do last year, of course, and when he's healthy, I'm sure that he will be just fine. It's a matter of all of these players figuring each other out, getting used to playing with each other, but they're veterans again. This is a very deep team, and it's an experienced team when you talk about the bench, and that's a very good sign, and I don't worry about this team at all. It's a matter of staying healthy. I think they're going to be a pretty good basketball team. I think at this point, as we speak tonight, the Bucks have done an unbelievable job getting to the free throw line. They have 40 more made free throws and 55 more free throw attempts than their opponents. Last year, they were terrible at getting to the line. They didn't get to the line. And this is without Corey Maggette to this point. So I'm very encouraged by the fact that the free throw attempts and makes our way up, and we haven't even seen Corey Maggette, who is probably the best at his position in getting to the free throw line, and he makes his free throws as well.
One of the players that I've been, of the few games that are actually, on TV, I'm really impressed about the way that Ersan Ilyasova has been, getting to the line. What has improved of Ersan since, the playoffs ended in April?
Well, I think Ersan is a developing player. Of course, he played for Turkey in the FIBA World Championships. They won a silver medal, the first medal in Turkish history. So that's great experience. That's a high level of play, of course. And he did very well for Turkey in that tournament. So, he's just an evolving player. He's still very young and still has room to grow, but he's done great things. He played very well last night in Minnesota in the third and fourth quarters. And I'm a big fan of Ersan Ilyasova. Just the way he hustles. And when you put Ersan Ilyasova and John Brockman on the same team, Brockman's another guy who will dive for balls and just out-hustle opponents. It's going to be very enjoyable to watch. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yes, Jim. I've noticed one player during the preseason that's been interested in for me is Chris Kramer. I didn't think he would be on the roster at this time, but he still is, so he must be very impressive in training camp, and Skiles must be impressed by him. What do you feel?
Well, he's a little bit like Scott Skiles. He reminds me very much of Scott Skiles in 1986 when Scott joined the Bucks, and he's a hustle player. He's a very good defender, two-time Big Ten Defender of the Year, and he has looked very good in training camp. But I think Scott Skiles just likes the way he approaches the game. I'm not sure that Chris Kramer will be on the roster when training camp is over. I don't know that he can crack the top 15, and obviously there are guaranteed contracts and all of that. But I think he has done a very good job for himself. I think players are smart to use preseason opportunities like this to showcase their game, and he has certainly done that. It would not surprise me if somebody picked him up in some fashion at some point during the season just for his hustle. He's a great practice player, if nothing else. And, of course, you need practice players to keep the starters and the second unit guys sharp for the season. So he's a real asset. I think that he could end up, with a contract in this league at some point.
What do you feel about the what people are saying about Chris Kramer? That he's pretty much a guard version of John Brackman.
Oh, yeah, I think that's not a bad comparison. He hustles and very active, very tough, it seems. And, he has been impressive. But you have to have a certain level of talent to play in this league for a long period of time. I think he can do some things. And again, he has shown very well in the preseason. But I would be very surprised if the Bucks had room for him because of their contracts. And that type of thing, but I do think he'll get a job somewhere.
Okay, I think, Nick, do you have anything more to ask about the my current state of the Bucks?
I'll ask you what are your expectations. I'm sure you expect them to do really well, like all Bucks fans, but what is your expectations this year?
Well, I don't put expectations on any team. I don't talk about the number of victories that I think they can accomplish because it's just not wise to do that. I think this team will play hard every night, and I think teams that do that will be successful. I think that they made the moves and brought in the players that will allow them to stay close to what they did last year, which was 46 victories. Certainly they could surpass that if things fell right. They might be a little short of that, but they'll be right in that area, I would assume. But the key is, for me, if they play well enough to win the Central Division, it would be a great year because then they would be in the top half of the playoff bracket. Probably, in all likelihood, would get home court advantage in that situation. So if they can somehow compete with the other teams in the Central Division, and right now it looks like the Bulls will be the chief competitor, if they can hold off those other teams and win the division, I think that would be a great step forward. And give them an opportunity to perhaps get into the second round of the playoffs. And when you get into the second round, I think almost anything can happen. Then you have a chance to get hot and maybe do some damage. But it'll be interesting. There are a lot of good teams in the Eastern Conference now, the Boston Celtics, the Orlando Magic, Miami, all those teams, Atlanta even. They're going to take a lot of victories out of the East and to see which teams can scrape up those remaining victories in our conference.
Okay, you're talking about home court advantage, and we're gonna ask you about some classic Bucks questions. What has been your favorite Bucks team of all time to call?
Oh man, that's pretty interesting. Last year jumped way up there. Last year's team was in the top three or four, I think. I always think the first team in the Bradley Center, and I believe that was the 88-89 team, something like that, or 89-90. The team that lost to Detroit in four games, they were swept by the Pistons in the playoffs, but they had eight players available in game four, and that was the series when Larry Krystkowiak got injured in game three, and Fred Roberts came out in game four and led eight players to a very hard-fought loss. He had 31 or 34 points, something like that. He was in the 30s. Played way over his normal output, and that team got a standing ovation after being swept. The fans stood and applauded them as they left the court. And that team defined Bucks basketball for me. Wasn't the most successful playoff run by any stretch, but they battled. And when that crowd stood up and gave a team that had just been swept out of the playoffs a standing ovation, it spoke volumes to me about what basketball, what the NBA, and what the Bucks are and should be every year. And I'll never forget that team. And, of course, 2001 was a great run. I enjoyed that team very much. They were a bunch of characters that figured out how to get it done, and they made it fun for us. And, you know, one game, one shot, and one foul, if you will, away from perhaps playing in the NBA Finals. So that team was in the top three, obviously, too.
Okay. Just a simple question. How did you get into broadcasting?
Well, actually, it was by accident. When I was a young man, I worked at the stadium in Minneapolis. I worked for Minnesota Twins games and Vikings games, and just worked at the ballpark. And just by chance, one of the guys I worked with who became a friend of mine was the son of Ray Scott, who was the voice of the Packers at that time for CBS. And over the years, I got to know the family a little bit, got to know the boys, and then Ray called me one time when I was in California and asked me if I wanted to spot for him. I kept track of players who were in the game for him for a CBS game. He was working with a new broadcaster guy who was just getting started in the business called Pat Summerall. And so I got my exposure at the top level and thought it was kind of enjoyable, and went back to school and started in a very small town in Iowa, and I've been very lucky. I've worked hard, but I've also been extremely lucky, and I'm very privileged to be where I am with the Bucks, and also having done seven seasons with the Brewers. So I've been very fortunate and very happy to have had these experiences.
You have anything to ask, Nick? Nick?
Yes, I'm here. I have a question about Glenn Robinson. Everyone who knows me knows he's my favorite Bucks of all time, and I was wondering, do you have any favorite Glenn Robinson moments that you
Glenn Robinson was a prolific scorer. He's second behind Kareem on the Bucks all-time scoring list. I mean, that guy could score. Sometimes I think he gave up as many points as he scored. He wasn't the greatest defender all the time, but Glenn had a real talent, and his career was probably shorter than I thought it was going to be. But he was a very enjoyable player, and I enjoy him as a person, too. I think that Glenn Robinson is a pretty good guy, and it was fun to have him around for a while, and he did a great job for the Bucks. He scored a lot of points, and I tell you what, he could score on anybody. The big dog Yank.
I'm Jim. You started to remind me, what year did you start broadcasting with the Bucks? Was that 87 or?
86-87 was 86. My first season. My first game was at Detroit. Dennis Rodman's first game. He started the same night I started in the league, and that was 86-87, October 31st of 1986.
Okay, how was it, you know, being a young broadcaster and, you know, getting the opportunity to actually call, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks? I know that you did grow up in Minnesota, but you were always close, you know, to, you know, the Milwaukee sports. You know, what was it like, you know, calling your first ever Bucks game?
Well, that's a great question, and of course, we're starting our 25th year together. John McLaughlin was my partner back then. He had been broadcasting Bucks games for about 10 years at that point, and it was great. I mean, I was very, very excited to get the opportunity to work at this level. And at that time, I was doing both sports. I did the 87 Brewers season. I did five seasons of both, and I was out of baseball for 3 years and did two more seasons with the Brewers. So seven of the 25 seasons, I had double duty, which was really great. You know, it was wonderful. And the fans in Wisconsin and Milwaukee have been very good to me. They've allowed me to learn and grow. And, you know, I don't know how much I knew. I was 35 years old when I started this, and I'd been covering sports for a long time. But the first thing I learned when I got these two jobs was how much I didn't know. And I've learned a great deal. I've had the opportunity to learn a lot about a lot of things in sports, not just the sport itself and the players and all of that, but the business side of it and the marketing and the ticket sales. I get involved to a little degree in some of those things. At least I've been able to observe it and learn. And that's really been a remarkable thing for me. And, of course, traveling around the country has been great. And, you know, you can't really think of another career that's comparable to this one in so many ways. I've always said it's the world's greatest men's club, and I'm a proud member. I really am thankful to have had the opportunity to do this. I've been around pro athletes since I was 14 years old, and I'm comfortable around them. I think I understand them a little bit at this point, and I certainly enjoy my association with all of the athletes and the coaches that I've been with.
Okay, you said before that you, of course, were, you know, the play-by-play guy for the Brewers for, you know, a few years. 7 years it was? 7 years to you in total?
7 seasons total, yes.
Okay, and of course, he did do the play-by-play of the only ever Brewers no-hitter. How was that?
Well, that was the fifth baseball game I had ever done in my life. wow. I think I did one little league game in Iowa a few years before, and then I started in the big leagues, and the fifth game I ever broadcast was a no-hitter. So that's where the luck comes in. You know, that's a remarkable thing, and certainly a great highlight of my career. I didn't know what I was doing at all that night. I tried to do my best, and I watched that tape now, and I'm not displeased with it, but you know, I was pretty young and pretty new to it, and here I am with a no-hitter, Juan Nieves, April 15th, 1987, in Baltimore Memorial Stadium. It was a cold night, wet and rainy, and just a remarkable start to that year. The team won 13 straight games. Paul Molitor had the hitting streak that year. So, you know, I was kind of thinking that the Brewers would be a rebuilding team, and I would be able to just learn the craft a little bit, settle in, and maybe be with a team that was ramping up a little bit, and then they go out and win 13 straight games, and we're on national TV every night being picked up by everybody, and it was pretty crazy, and I guess that was my baptism by fire, because again, I wasn't sure what I was doing at that point. I just tried to do the best I could, and the spotlight was pretty bright, so it was a good start. I mean, I learned a lot, and I was able to get through that. That taught me that I probably could control my composure a little bit and get through you know, real hot times, and that's exactly what that was.
How does that Juan Nieves no-hitter compare to other great moments in your broadcasting career?
Well, it's pretty hard to top a major league no-hitter. I mean, that's way up there. Until we win an NBA championship with the Bucks, that's probably right near the top, if not at the top. You know, I've had other things happen, but you know, it's really interesting. For many years, the big moments, other than the no-hitter, were opponents. I mean, I called Michael Jordan's 20,000th point in Chicago. That was a lot of fun to do. I think maybe, you know, Michael Redd had 57 points against Utah, but the Bucks lost the game. This past November 14th, when Brandon Jennings went for 55 on Golden State, that has to be up there, too. That was just an absolutely thrilling, thrilling night. And for some reason, early in the third quarter, I don't know what made me say it, the Bucks were struggling, but I saw something in Jennings, and I said on the air, something's going to happen here. And a couple of minutes later, the kid took off and had 55 points and, you know, just unbelievable numbers for a rookie, and it was an exceptional night, too. So that's right up there, too. I really enjoyed that night. And I had Karl Malone. We were in Utah one time, and Karl Malone was left off the All-Star game, and he scored 60 against the Bucks, 60 or 61. And you know, that was a huge deal, but again, the Bucks lost. So when Jennings had 55 and the Bucks won, that was a highlight.
Okay, and I still remember that Brandon Jennings game from last year, and I don't remember the exact line, but he said something like, "The crowd was going crazy," and he said something like, "They're looking at you, kid. They're looking at you," or something like that. Do you remember that? Can you help me out
here? Well, you say a lot of things when a guy's doing that. I mean, I remember saying, something about, you know, to John, I said, you know, the young kids would say this is sick. Yeah, the way he was scoring, it was sick. And I said, it's becoming epic, and it was epic. And we said the crowd won't ever forget this, and you know, things like that. So, I mean, pretty obvious, pretty easy stuff, but it was just a magical, magical second half. That kid scored 45 points in a half, 29 in the third quarter, 55 in a game in which he did not score in the first quarter at all.
Yeah.
I mean, remarkable, remarkable half of basketball.
Yeah, and I
knew. And by the way.
Okay, I go.
And he knew when to stop. He knew when to pull back so that his team could win. That impressed me as much as anything.
Yeah, he knew at the exact time, you know, to feed a ball off to Andrew Bowiet, which really impressed me.
Exactly. I mean, he knew when he had to get other people involved to finish it off and get the victory. That was very impressive for a 20-year-old kid at that point.
He was 20. I'm thinking it was 19, but I think it was 20 at that time.
No, he was 20. September 23rd, he turned 20 last year, and he's just 21 now, so.
Nick, do you have anything to ask?
Speaking of Brandon Jennings, with him being this up-and-coming superstar and the hot topic in Milwaukee being the rebuilding a new arena for the Bucks team, do you think having a young superstar in Brandon Jennings and if they continue to have success, can bring a new arena to the team?
That's a very good question. I applaud that. That's a very good question. My belief is that winning and having a team that people are behind and excited about, and you know, if they're filling the Bradley Center, it all helps. If this community decides to do something and improve the venue and improve the entertainment value to the community, I think all of that helps. So absolutely, that would be a big part of it. Unfortunately, the economy is in the tank right now, and we have to wait and get through that. Orlando just built a beautiful building, and they had to wait, I think it was 10 years since they started thinking about it. They had a couple of things that didn't go well, but you have to stay the course, and then eventually good things like that can happen. But certainly the team on the upswing helps a great deal, I would think.
Last year, Andrew Bogut did create Squad 6. What were your initial impressions of Squad 6?
Well, I love Squad 6. I was absolutely excited about it right away, and I think they added so much to our games. In fact, I can tell you this. I was in Detroit. They're trying to do the same thing. There are several other teams around the league that saw what Squad 6 was able to do, and now they are being copied. And that tells you all you need to know about how good it is and what a great job they did. And it's remarkable. I absolutely loved it. I think NBA basketball is great, and I think there's a lot of hype around the game. But that was really a nice addition, and it made it so much fun. And it was a great idea. Andrew Bogut came up with a marvelous, marvelous idea, and that will always be something that he has contributed to the game of basketball, in my opinion. If we see this proliferate around the league, Andrew Bogut has started something that, in some way, has perhaps changed the experience of watching NBA basketball, which I think is remarkable.
And you did say the big hype word, and as you know, there was, this offseason, there was some big hype going around in South Beach, Jim. What do you think about the Miami Thrice, you know, the Miami Heat, of course, you know, getting LeBron James and Dwayne Wade?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. They certainly have the right to do that. I think when, with my experience in baseball, my first question was, if owners are guilty of collusion on occasion, why aren't players guilty of collusion when they team up and go to one team like that? It'll be interesting. I'm not sure I like it long term in the league. I think it's created a situation this year where it will be good for the league. A lot of people will be drawn to the NBA just to see what this is all about. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I don't happen to think they're going to win the championship right away, but they will win a lot of regular season games, in my opinion. But what it does to the business of basketball concerns me a little bit. You take Chris Bosh out of Toronto, and you take LeBron out of Cleveland. Cleveland's going to be down. They're not going to draw. They're not going to have the same kind of a business model that they had with him. So, now, you can't really say this about Toronto because there are so many people in that area, and they will still draw, and they will still do fine. But let's say Bosh came from Indiana and went with LeBron from Cleveland to Miami. Then you have depleted two teams. You have lessened Cleveland in that case and Indiana in that case. So long term, I would hate to see players do that because I think it would weaken the league on the business side, and that's not good for anybody.
Of course, you were around in the with the 95-96 Bulls, of course, you know, the best team in NBA history. We know, I really don't want to ask this, but I think I have to. How do you think that team, the 95-96 team, of course, with Jordan, you know, Rodman and Pippen, compared to, you know, the 2010-2011 Miami Heat team with LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is Michael Jordan would never have to go get two other guys to feel like he could win a championship. Larry Bird would never have to go get two other to think he could win a championship. Magic Johnson would never have to go and find two other people to think he could win a championship. That's the difference. Those guys were unbelievable in terms of their leadership, in terms of their skill. They would, I can't speak for them, but maybe they would have seen it as a weakness to go out and need to have, first of all, they never would have played together. I mean, that's ridiculous. They were superstars and could carry teams by themselves. And oh, by the way, every one of those three players did carry a team by himself, basically. I mean, Magic had Kareem for a couple of years, but, you know, you get the point. Those guys carried their teams to championships. Those are the kind of players that should make maximum dollars in our league. Totally different, in my opinion, than what we're seeing today. They're just different people. They're different character. You know, I don't know. I can't imagine any of those three players doing what Wade and LeBron have done, to be honest with you.
Well, don't say that Bird really carried the Boston Celtics. You know, he had
Robert Parrish and he had Kevin McHale. But, you know, I bet those other two guys would tell you, and I've heard them say it, that they wouldn't have gotten there without Larry Bird. I heard Kevin McHale just say that a month ago.
Yeah.
It was about Larry Bird's leadership. Larry Bird was the cornerstone of that team. Magic Johnson, when he got to the Lakers, was the cornerstone of that team. And Michael Jordan, of course, was in Chicago. How do you dispute that?
Yeah, you just really can't. And I'm really sorry for asking you that, but I just had to say that.
No, that's okay. I'm just saying, I mean, how do you dispute that those three guys were, you know, were the cornerstone of their teams? It's pretty clear to me they were.
Exactly.
And now in Miami, who's the cornerstone?
I'm thinking D-Wade is. No.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
You know,
we'll see. What is that? If Dwayne Wade is the cornerstone, what does that say about LeBron James? Chris Bosh isn't in their class, in my opinion. He's pretty good, but he's not in the class of the other two. I just think the really greatest players of all time wouldn't even think about going to find other great players and try to steamroll a league like that.
Yeah, most definitely. Because so this is a new era, and LeBron James, you know, I think he wants to be. You know, he wants to play with his buddies, you know, and, you know, Bosh and Wade, you know. I think Wade has that leadership mentality. Of course, he did play with Shaq when he didn't win the championship, but I think he does have that in him. Of course, I don't think LeBron has that in him. Of course, Bosh, he's just, going to be the second best player, you know, a championship team. And, of course, he's the third best player. But, you know, I shouldn't ask you that. We shouldn't compare, you know, this team to the classic teams, but I just had to raise that question because, you know, all, you know, the ESPNs and all the analysis, you know, are the experts are comparing those two teams. I just wanted your opinion.
Well, yeah, you talk about hype. You know, we use the word hype. There's no greater hype than what's going on right now on ESPN.
Nope.
I mean, you know, they had the decision show. They're going to hype this. It's, you know, it's unbelievable what's going on. They haven't played a game yet.
I know.
I mean, it's all hype. Now, if they win the championship, if those three players win the championship, you think it will be the same as Magic's championships, Bird's championships, or Jordan's championships? Will it be perceived the same way?
No.
I don't think so. Remember when who was it, Gary Payton and Karl Malone, they went to the Lakers and took less money to win a championship?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even come close?
Mm-hmm.
And if they had won a championship, I don't think people appreciate this idea that you can, you know, somehow figure out how to win a championship. You're supposed to figure out how to win a championship with your teammates and figure out how to win games enough and be good enough and play the game the right way to win a championship. It's not about, you know, players putting the right guys together. That's what general managers are for.
Yeah, and of course that you know, Lakers team with like some Malone and Payton, you know, they were beaten out by a team that really people said didn't have any superstars, you know, just an all-around, you know, team. And the you know, the Detroit Pistons,
yeah,
you know, beat out
amazing.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you know. I mean, that's where I'm coming from. You know, give me a team. I don't need this concocted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's okay. It's hype and it's, you know, it's interesting and all of that. But you know what? I'd much rather wear a ring from the 1994 Detroit Pistons. How's that? Or I mean, the 2004 Detroit Pistons.
Mm-hmm. I think the most important ring. The most important ring to you is the 2010-11 Milwaukee Bucks, of course.
Well, that's the one I'd really like to have, and it doesn't have to be this year. It could be any time in the future if I'm around. That'd be great. But you get my point, though. You know, 2004, and John Hammond was in Detroit at that time. That team, you know, they had Rasheed Wallace, but beyond that, they didn't really have any quote superstars. And I, you know, I'm as impressed with that championship as any in a long time. I think that's what the game is about, finding a way to beat everybody else, not trying to beat them in August. You know, these three guys tried to win the championship in August.
And, you know, people don't remember, but you know, Kevin Durant did sign a big extension. But, you know, it was, you know, behind the decision and this signing and that signing and, you know, other than, you know, the Bucks, I'm really super interested to see how the Thunder are going to do because, you know, Kevin Durant, you know, is a superstar in the making. But that team is just a
team. That's one of my favorite teams.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite teams because of the way they put it together and the talent they have. I like that team a lot. And I like them for these types of reasons that we're talking about. I think that's a great story there, and I'd like to see them have success, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and the Heat are going to be fun to watch. You know, a lot of banter on the ESPN. I think, you know, anytime there's a Heat game, you know, in an hour sports center, they're going to probably take up like 30 minutes. And the Bucks are
You have to understand what happens in television. When Michael Jordan played, if he put on a pair of shorts, everybody in the country ran the highlights, and that was all it took. You know, it's easy. It's easy. And for ESPN and all of this stuff, I mean, it's going to be easy now to talk about the Miami Heat. And you're going to get Miami Heat, Miami Heat, Miami Heat, Miami Heat. I've already had fans tell me that they are tired of the Miami Heat. And I don't like to hear that because I don't think that's good for the NBA business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how widespread that is at this point, but to hear it at all before the season starts, it gets your attention. You know, people. I don't know how much the average person really appreciates trying to win a championship in August by getting together like that. But we'll see. I mean, I'm not down on it. I think it's just an interesting discussion and an interesting phenomenon, and I happen to be on the side of the teams that do it with what they've been, you know. Players don't decide who plays with whom, you know, historically, and I don't know that it's good practice if that starts to happen. That's just my belief, but maybe I've been around too long or something, but that's how I feel about it. I think general managers are good at their jobs, and that's their job to put teams together, and it's not a player's job to put teams together.
I totally agree. What about you, Nick?
I agree too. I'm just enjoying this conversation.
I think it's basically, you know, just the GM's job, you know, to get the players on their team. And I a bunch of players, you know, sitting around, you know, drinking coffee and say, hey, you know, let's go here in 2010. Let's go to Miami or let's go to Chicago.
Exactly. That's easy. You know what? I've been around general managers for 25 years. I know how hard they work. I know how hard they worry about things. I know how difficult it is for them to make a deal. I know how difficult it is for them to work within the salary structures that are given to them. I mean, it's an incredibly tough job. And to have players, like you say, get together for a cup of coffee and swing the balance of the league is a very difficult thing to handle for me.
Mm-hmm. And
it's not designed to be like that.
And of course,
I mean, you know, if the players want to run the league, then they can, you know, maybe they should build the buildings and pay the salaries and do all of that. See, that's where the risk is. There's no risk in having a cup of coffee with Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh and saying, let's do this. There's no risk there.
Yeah, and
but there's risk when you're putting up buildings and trying to sell tickets and you know, trying to put a team together. There's a lot of risk.
Yeah, and I think if it's
I value the people that stand in the line of risk.
And
just for the sake of discussion.
Are you thankful for what Hammond has done? Hammond and Scales have done in the past few years with this team.
Oh, it's amazing what they've done. In my opinion, I think it's great. And you know, I always joke with John about how easy he makes it look and how difficult I know that it is. I mean, it's really remarkable, and I hope that people understand. I hope they don't think it's easy, because it isn't. And he's done just a great job. And Scott Skiles and John Hammond together have been remarkable. And that's why I'm very encouraged about this. And that's, again, when I see what I see happening in Milwaukee, and to think that, you know, if Brandon Jennings decided to, he could just get together with Chris Paul and Kevin Durant and go off and play somewhere else, and all of the hard work that everybody has put in here is just evaporated like that. It just bothers me a little bit to even contemplate that. But now I don't have to contemplate it. It's happening in Miami. We're going to see what happens.
Yeah, and I hope he stays.
I just picked Brandon because, you know, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he's one of the cornerstones of our team now with Andrew Bogut. Andrew Bogut could have been in the conversation too, but, you know, the point is if they're playing together, they're not going to figure out how to play together. They already are. But if one of them, you know, had two buddies and they decided to do this, it would hurt me because of all the hard work that other people have put in to do this in the conventional way.
Yeah, most definitely.
You know, when things are done in a conventional way, everybody's kind of on the same playing field. When you change the rules like those three players did, man, I tell you what, that puts everybody, you know, that's a different deal altogether. And, you know, I'm not sure anybody was ready for that. And we'll have to evaluate it over time. But any time will tell. You know, if they don't win, first of all, let's get off of this in a second here. But if LeBron James doesn't win four or five championships, this has been a total bust, hasn't it?
Yeah, just a bunch of...
How would you like to be him and have the pressure now to win four or five championships, or your legacy is a total bust?
Mm-hmm.
He's a great player, mm-hmm. and his legacy, you know, would not have been a total bust if he had just stayed and kept going about his business, I don't think. But he's kind of put himself in a position now where a lot of people are going to think that, you know, I don't know what good comes of this for him, because if he doesn't win five championships, it's a bust. If he wins five championships, he won't get the credit because he should have. Why would he put himself in that position?
Yes. Jim Paschke, I've pretty much agree with everything you said. You know, a great, you know, basketball mind has been around, you know, the NBA for, you know, over 20 years, and, you know, I said the great. I'd much rather, have a GM build a team and have, a bunch of players come together and say, I want to go here, I want to go here, I want to go here. This is, not fantasy football or whatever, where you can, just pick a player and have him go to this team. This is real basketball. This is a business. And, the players are just basically leading this business.
Well, I like the fantasy league analogy. That's very good. That's exactly what's happened. Somebody had three pretty good picks and they put them together. That's interesting. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. From that standpoint, it is very intriguing to see if they, if they will be as successful as they intend to be. But, karma is a funny thing. Be careful what you wish for, because if you do it the wrong way, very often it doesn't turn out the right way.
I think my co-host Nick has had enough with all this heat talk. Jim, we're not gonna hold you here for too long, but are you running out of time or?
Well, I've enjoyed it very much, and you guys have taken me into areas here where I didn't know I'd end up, but it's been a good discussion, and I appreciate the time very much.
Okay. One last general NBA question before we let you go. Other than Heat, which we talked about ad nauseum, according to my co-host Nick McKeever. We talked about the Thunder. We talked about the Bucks, of course. What other NBA team should fans watch out for?
Well, Miami, of course.
I said other than Miami.
No, Orlando is going to be very tough. I think Dwight Howard has committed himself to being better because of what's going on in Miami. And Boston is obviously going to be an interesting team with Shaquille. The Lakers are going to be great. San Antonio, I don't know how they're going to compete, but they're going to be a good team. Oklahoma City is going to be a good team. Those probably are the top five or six in the league right now, and everybody else is going to have to try to figure out where they fit in under those, probably.
Nick, do you have anything else to say?
It's just been a pleasure listening to Pashke talk about basketball, Bucks basketball, before the season starts. Yeah.
I appreciate it, guys. I appreciate the discussion, and it's always good to get innovative opinions, and I appreciate yours very much.
Yes, and I hope, going off topic here, but I hope I do have Dish Network, and the season, if anybody from Dish Network is listening, the season starts, the Bucks season starts, I think in 11 days, and Dish Network still doesn't have Fox Sports Wisconsin on its schedule, or whatever, because they're having a heated discussion with Fox, so Dish Network, if you're listening, please let me watch my Milwaukee Bucks and Jim Pashke. That's all I have to say. Jim, thanks for coming on the show. And it's been a pleasure. And do you have anything else to say?
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for the time. And it's been interesting. Thank you.
thank you, Jim. And when we come back from the Bucks, we're going to go into some Bucks news and preseason game talk.
Yeah, monster. Say what you wanna front, motherfuckers, I'm a monster. Don't matter how you front, you motherfuckers, I'm a monster. Tell anyone you want, cause I'm a motherfucking monster. I don't sleep, I'm insane, I don't think, I'm insane. Need a shrink, couple seams coming loose in my brain. I done purchased a casket. See, death is a facet of life that puts fright in the whites of most eyes. Put on past it, elastic, I stretch the fantastic to fit in the bar so the average can catch it. My path is a scribble of a brush, I'm the paint. Let my map hit the canvas, I can't leave it blank. Come alive, a Picasso, then crawl out the picture.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Bucks Cast, and it's time to do a brief a recap of the three preseason games that have happened since the last episode of Gamebucks Cast. The first game, since the last episode, was on Thursday, October the 14th. We beat the Wizards on the road, of course, at the Wizards Arena. We beat them on 96-88. And I actually did get a chance to see the game. Of course, that game was on NBA TV. I really don't have much to say other than I was really impressed with the way that Drew Gooden played. He put up 25 points and 6 rebounds. Of course, I'm more impressed with the 25 points and the 6 rebounds. But of course, he did show off his mid-range game. He did shoot some, you know, shots, you know, by the three-point line, and I think overall he did pretty good. And Jennings, you know, put up some good points, 13 points in 25 minutes. He got 7 assists, which I was impressed. 3 steals, good. Delfino, he came back from an injury. He got 19 points, you know, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, 1 assist. Just, it's preseason, guys. Just stick with us, you know. Not really much, you know, to really talk about, since really this doesn't matter, you know, in February or March. But Nick, what do you think about our 96-88? Win against the Wizards?
Nothing much. A good road win on during the preseason. I am impressed by the way Drew Gooden played. He's proven that he can be a forward that Jennings can rely on that he didn't have last season, that he could give the ball to other than Bogut. And it's just a game where Jennings can get used to the other players on the court to get ready for the season. You have Douglas Roberts, Gooden, Larry Sanders. You just need to get all these newcomers on the court together at the same time. That's pretty much what these games mean right now.
Okay, and the next game was a 91-77 point loss against the Memphis Grizzlies. Let me look at the box, tell you some stats from the box score. Jennings, 12 points. 2 assists. CDR, 12 points. Gooden, 13. Blankets, 11. Really not much to talk about. They did decent, but we lost. Not much to talk about, but the next game is it, which really matters, because it's a return. It's a NBA return of Mr. Andrew Bogut. Of course, I think it was actually Jim Paschke, our BucksCast guest, that was announcing this Milwaukee against Minnesota game on the radio. And actually, Bogut did good in the limited amount of time that he actually did play. Bogut did average 11 points and 5 rebounds in 14 and a half minutes. Delfino, in 21 minutes, got 19 points. Jennings, 14. CDR, 13. Ilyasova, you know, 22 and 7 in 33 minutes. You know, Chris Kramer did really do pretty good, and he played a lot in this game. He played 36 minutes. You know, got 11 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. I want to ask you this, because I think by next week, our next show, we'll have this question answered. But Nick, out of these two players, who do you think will make the final cut? Chris Kramer or Brian Skinner?
I would be shocked if Chris Kramer makes the team, but I've heard from what you will hear, Skiles likes Kramer for his hard work during practice, but
this is most likely going to be Brian Skinner who's going to make the final. Out of the two, you have to say Brian Skinner because you can't have too many big men on the team. So,
and of course, Chris Kamer, you know, is an Indiana boy, and he would be a hometown favorite for the Ford Win Mad Ends. Of course, you know, being coached by, you know, one of the Bucks cast, one of the members of the Bucks cast, you know, Super Friends group. He'll be coached by Joey Meyer, who was on last week's episode, but I do like Chris Kamer. I think he is actually the guard version of what John Rackman is with the big guys. But you know, Kramer is a Scott kind of player, but you know, Brent Skinner, you know, he's of course, you know, experienced in the NBA, and I'd rather have Chris Kramer than Brent Skinner. I think, you know, a Scouts will end up picking Brian Skinner, which, you know, I don't mind. It's just, you know, the 12th man, you know, maybe the 15th man or something, just, you know, a reserve, you know, just in case, you know, Bogut or Gooding, unfortunately, you know, if they get injured. And do you have anything else to say about that?
I pretty much agree with you.
Yeah. You know what, really, guys? There really isn't much to talk about. We are going to delve into the big burning Bucks questions, you know, for the upcoming 2010-11 season. We'll try to answer all those questions on next week's show, of course. 2 weeks from now, show is going to be the Thursday after the Hornets game. We're going to review that game and look ahead, you know.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I just got to say I'm getting tired of all these preseason games.
I'm tired of talking about it, you know, seriously, because it's preseason.
I mean, it's good to see them play before the season. We've been waiting all summer to watch them play, but I just want the real thing to start now, cause
yeah, pretty much. Of course, this is pre-season, before the season. None of this matters, you know. We'll just cut all this from you know the record books, you know, just a week from now. But I'm really pumped. 2 weeks from now, we can finally talk real NBA games, and I think you know the Bucks cast will just flyer. Whatever, you know, amazing analogy you want to say. I think this show is just going to go through the roof, you know, in these upcoming, you know, 82 games. Redneck.
Yes.
I'm pumped. You're pumped. We keep on saying this every week. I'm tired of all this jibber-jabber. As Mr. T likes to say, all this jibber-jabber. You know, about all this talking about, you know, the Heat, the Lakers. We talked about this, of course, with Bashy Eastheart. About all this, you know, Heat, Laker, you know, preview bullshit or whatever. But, bring on the season. Bring on the 82 games. Bring on, you know, the two-month postseason that everybody seems to hate. Unless, you know, you're the two teams that are in the finals. But just bring on the season. I'm ready. Yes, I think I'm. Yeah, you're ready too, aren't you?
Yes, of course.
I
don't know. Clear.
I think it is time to wrap up the show because we're just rambling on like a bunch of crazy lunatics right now. But you can follow me, Dakota Schmidt, on Twitter. My Twitter is @ Dakota_Schmidt. That is Dakota, like the states north and south Dakota, and it's Schmidt, like the old school, you know, Phillies Hall of Fame third baseman. You can email the show. It is buckscast@ gmail.com. If you don't know how to spell buckscast, and just look at your iPod, you'll see it in big green letters, buckscast. and did a little at the gmail.com. Nick, do you have anything to plug?
Just follow me on Twitter on Black MacGyver. Just one word, Black MacGyver, like the TV show. Well, Black MacGyver is not the TV show, but MacGyver was.
MacGyver, and you're black. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's wrong with that, Nick? You're just like, yeah, sure I am. Just say it.
You're black and I'm
your
proud.
Your name sounds like MacGyver, but people call him MacGyver, but it's actually McKeever. He keeps on saying, don't call me MacGyver, call me McKeever. So when you see Nick McKeever on the streets, say, hi, Nick McKeever, how you doing, buddy?
All right.
Say, hey, I can hear you on the Buckscast. And I guess I'll say, hey, we've had enough of the Buckscast. This has been episode number 8 of the Buckscast, and we can't wait to do this again this Wednesday. We're going to try to fix this whole scheduling stuff, because we're not going to have any, you know, big guests when the season gets underway. So I think we're going to have the shows out every Thursday morning. So from now on. So guys, keep on listening. Rate the show on iTunes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 stars. As many stars as you think this show actually deserves. So until next time, guys. I'm Nicole Schmidt. My co-host is Nick McKeever. And until next time, everybody, fear the deer.